SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Lowe's Ventana Canyon Ranch, the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing. A very good Wednesday. Everybody, Dick Powell's here. Rick Hammerly's here. The first full day of Symposium in the books. It was a very good, spirited, active day throughout. And Hammer, good morning.
Good morning to you. It's good to be on and ready to roll here early this morning. And like you said, it was, we say the first full day. Monday was a day, but yesterday was the first, active panels and everything, and wrapped up with a repeat of the show yesterday with Bob and Todd up on stage answering questions. And, as those guys are great doing that, and I think that was well-received.
Well, and the reprises, in fact, Bob's brother, Bill, and I were talking afterward, too. It was 5 years ago that was the last time they did it. And, a lot's changed in 5 years. Dick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. Amy Zimmerman did just a sensational job because she'd ask questions, back off, let them talk. Bob, not a problem. Todd needs a little prodding, but Bob was kind of goofing around and stuff. So I think Todd was very relaxed, and you got to see over an hour of two Hall of Fame trainers just talking shop and things like that. It was just great. But I thought Amy did a sensational job just asking a question, walking away. She brought up the suspension. She brought up, maybe difficult subjects, and it was handled very well.
We obviously, for those that listened to the replay this morning or were listening live yesterday or picked it up on the archive, to have 5 years ago, Bob sat for, I don't know, an hour and a half that morning. And it was actually, much more in the shadow of the Triple Crown horses and in advance of what, ended up becoming really an unnecessary, protracted embarrassment for the game. I mean, and it was so avoidable. And ideally, what you heard from Bob yesterday, obviously wants the rearview mirror concept. But I think much like when there was the post Baffert, the post heart attack Baffert. That was different, and he even said it. He talked about how arrogant and how out of control he was. He came back after that heart attack, and I know from private conversations with him, he did not want and does not want that period to be what he's remembered for. He wants to come back and earn people's trust and confidence again. And in fact, I was talking to Matt Vance from Remington. We'll be with Matt Friday probably at Remington. And he said, the industry basically had him as one of the, and Todd too, as the poster outfits. And and then you had a problem that again with better management and a different attitude would have been entirely avoidable or would have been easily dealt with and immediately put to bed with a different with a different response from the barn. And of course, don't forget, it's not just the trainer. You have an owner, too. And in Amer Zidane, you had a guy that wanted to press every lever possible. And it was the wrong response, and it was just a one of those situations that the industry, you know, you it's exasperating when you're somebody that is rooting for the game to, you know, to do well.
Well, I can honestly say as well, after talking to Bob a little bit afterwards, he has. It's gone. It doesn't want to even go there anymore. And as usual, the only winners were the lawyers in the end. And so it's time. It's like a re-break, like you said. It's time to move on. And he's moved on.
Yeah, I definitely got that impression. And he has some nice two-year-olds that are going to turn three. And he looks kind of loaded for next year, at least as far as depth. And we'll see how far the quality will be. But, yeah, it's Zidane made the mistake of thinking he was in America. Thought he was in America. Thought he was going to get due process. Thought he was going to get innocent till proven guilty. And it's like, it's not how horse racing operates. So unfortunately, Bob gets thrown under the bus and then got kind of backed up over the third year suspension, which I just thought was completely unwarranted. So it was. He's moving on. Todd was a little candid about his two-year-olds. Didn't have any real excitement about his two-year-olds turning three. He could be playing poker. He might have. Who knows what he has. But he was a little less than ebullient about his
that's two-year-olds. That's a good way to put it.
Less than ebullient.
That's a good way to put it. This morning, a couple of things. I'll give you a quick survey. We'll do a Hong Kong with Dick. We didn't get a chance to put up a late pick three, which ends up being actually all right. We're going to hear from program director Robert Hartman first this morning. Rich Rosa is going to stop by, too, from Daily Racing Form. And, you know, some of the things that came up yesterday with Marshall Graham, and it's always great to hear from Marshall. Some of the things we heard from Marshall. We talk again about the projected odds and the value of putting that information in the players' hands. Rich is involved with a lot of the leading edge data development at DRF, and we're going to hear from Rich about it. Lisa Lazarus, just heard from. We're going to see maybe at 8 or at 8:30. Which, of course, would be 10 or 10:30 if you're in the East. Jay Hovde and
Aaron
Greider. The book that Jay just wrote, Well Armed, Horse of Destiny. And, of course, Aaron Greider, jockey of Horse of Destiny.
That's right. Jay was good to his word the other day when he was on. He dropped a book off at the room, so I have that.
Yeah, nice.
Another book for the stack, but it's on the top now.
Well, he's going to. They were signing yesterday at the end of the session, at the end of the day's various workshops and presentations. We'll talk about Chuck in a second. We had the memorial for Chuck and the announcement. Anthony Parada and his wife Ellen have established a $50,000 scholarship program to be administered and awarded through the auspice of the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. And we had a service yesterday for Chuck after the last session. And Dick, you were in that last session, the 50 ideas in 50 minutes. A couple of years ago, I was part of the 45 ideas in 45 minutes. So you see the inflation that's involved in some of these programs. But anyway, Hovde and Greider in hour three. We got to get Dan Silver in from Roberts, as we always do, see what's going on at Roberts Communications. I just heard back from Lisa. No good. She's going to be tied up because doesn't get free till 10. So there will be no Lisa Lazarus on site, which is of course strange. We get her on by phone at the drop of a hat.
There's a lot of Haiwoo Heisa agenda items. So they've been very busy.
Exactly.
Behind the mic.
A couple of the other. Let me run down a little bit of yesterday before we talk about a little bit more of what's going on today. The the AI presentation, and that was going on while we were on the air, so I did not get a chance. Dick, I don't know if you did. You get a chance? No.
No.
All right. There was the global conversation, and I was right with Solomon. It is Solomon. Solomon Sharp, the Jamaican racing operation, and there was the Next Generation presentation, which include Naj. In fact, well, I didn't see Naj somehow. Naja Thompson, of course, from the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, and Jeff Maddie was here from the Pennsylvania THA. Eric DaCosta, of course, who is working at Oaklawn and Prairie Meadows, who was in his own cancer fight, leukemia fight, for those that haven't heard. Alexa Rabbit as well, and Alexa, of course, is basically the communications director at HIWU, and I got to see part of that. Then the 50 Ideas in 50 Minutes, and there was the racing guy from Yonkers, right? The Alex,
Alex DeDoyen.
DeDoyen and Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup. She was on via the magic of Zoom. Liza Hendricks, of course, the Hendricks family, so prominent on the Chase front, and between brother Parker and Ricky and everybody. But Liza, who has been on the leading edge of the digital sale concept, and she's working for Inglis as their CEO. Jay Hovde has mentioned, and Dick, you as well. And that was the last session of the morning. And there were a lot of, it seemed to me, from what I heard of them, I think I left the list up in my room, the handout. But it seemed like there was a lot of thematic offerings about, you know, things that the industry can do that would positively impact.
Yep. And hopefully doable type things.
Right.
They weren't pie in the sky, yeah, we should all get along or anything like that. They were kind of bullet point.
Technical. A lot of technical stuff.
Luckily, I ran into Kate from the museum and Brian, and they were telling me what they're doing with recording Hall of Famers and their histories and things like that, because one of my points was we got to go out and capture our history. We're letting it go, and we're letting it slide, and the technology is such that virtually anybody can do it now. It doesn't have to be edited. It doesn't have to be slick and fancy, but we need B-roll footage of all these people. An example I gave, can you imagine having 2 hours with Leon Blusewicz?
Well, we have yeah. Of course, about 15 hours of Leon,
exactly,
Blusewicz in our archives.
But the world, the game needs this stuff to preserve them, not just Hall of Famers, but all sorts of people, bettors, track owners, whoever it is. And we just need to embrace that in the museum, which I found out before we went on, so it worked out well. They're working on a similar project.
Well, and, you know, the very similar to what Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks have done with Holocaust survivors and World War II veterans. Clocker John Nichols from Churchill. John has been screaming about this for as long as I know him, that a oral history, a visual oral history for the game, for preservation. And I've when it comes to the turf writers and broadcasters, I've had this conversation and have kind of offered to champion a project in terms of preservation at racetracks. I mean, like, for instance, and thank goodness, you know, Dave Joseph has been out in front of this at Pimlico and at Laurel, and it's basically, you know, making sure all the archival materials, whether it's photography, whether it's clip books, all of that is being saved when racetracks get remodeled, or when we lose racetracks. Who was the guy, Hammer? I'm going to forget his name. I'll think of it as we talk. At Hollywood, the video director.
Benoit? Bob Benoit?
No, not the photography. The head of video. You know, he put together that wonderful, like 25-minute Hollywood DVD.
I can't think. You're like a Ken Burns type of thing.
As soon as I think of his name, you'll know it. But he, you know, a lot of that stuff at Hollywood, what happened to all the stuff at Rockingham? Yeah. Where is the stuff from Atlantic City Racecourse?
Golden Gate Fields.
Golden Gate Fields and Bay Meadows. These materials.
And the materials need to be digitized, because tape breaks down. You're not going to have it forever. So you got a 3/4-inch videotape. It's not going to be there next time you open a box.
Well, it's funny. We're talking about tangible items. Many things, and even right now you can go on. They've auctioned a lot of stuff off. And hopefully they're taken. We'll auction 9 and we'll keep one, like you say, and have some type of, historical record.
What did I call the the Historic Preservation Committee kind of a thing?
Okay. That could be a project
for the kids
for here for the
that
university.
That would be tremendous. I mean, an internship kind of thing. In fact, I should really ask where things stand. I don't know if Rich Rose is going to know, but the Daily Racing Form, Becky Ryder at the University of Kentucky. At the Keeneland Library was digitizing all of the Morning Telegraph clip books and literally every page of the Morning Telegraph, through to the transition to the Daily Racing Form. And I don't know if that has stalled or where that stands. But speaking of Kentucky, I'll preemptively say tonight, as the mighty Maroon Cagers face off against the University of Kentucky tonight. I'm not hopeful.
The mighty Maroon Cagers. Who dat?
Who came up with the term cage?
Cager? You know what? That's a great question. How did basketball?
I don't think they had a net. I think they did have.
Well, it was a peach basket. It was always a basket.
Yeah, originally, a peach basket.
The cage you think of is as square, so I don't think of. And a basketball obviously is round, but you saw that in growing up, and I never equated that with a basketball. So maybe we have a research project we can find out. Somebody will know.
Well, my favorite part of that is, raise your hand out there if you went to the Basketball Hall of Fame, the National Basketball Hall of Fame. In Springfield, Mass, on the campus of Springfield College, I can raise my hand. That is where you saw it. You saw it before they built the building.
I was there when I was
a little kid.
A little kid.
Well, then you very well may be one of the few. When my dad took me, it was still on the campus of Springfield College. And the funniest thing to me about the peach basket and the basketball was the guy on a ladder. Taking the ball out of the basket. Who was the guy? Who was the brilliant innovator who said, if we cut the bottom out of the basket, we don't have to have the guy on the ladder?
It's called progress. Moves along.
I mean, are you kidding me?
Maybe his name was Cage.
Nicholas Cage.
Nicholas Cage. There you go.
The family was established early that way. No, that's the funniest thing. Somebody said, why don't we just cut the bottom out of the basket?
Wow. I wonder if that was after a long night of drinking.
Dr. Naismith, so great.
I've been at a boxing hall of fame.
In Canastota.
I saw Tyson get inducted.
Very cool.
Where's that?
Canastota.
It's off an exit on the New York State Thruway before you get to Syracuse. And somehow they had two boxing champions come from Canastota, Carmine Basilio. And Billy Backus, they were welterweights, and somehow the town put together something and called it a Hall of Fame, and it is recognized in June. There's a big ceremony, so I saw Tyson, Azuma Nelson, Stallone got in. It was 95 degrees, and you're outside, and they're on the stage, and they're sweating bullets. So Mike is as nervous as could be, sweated through his shirt. He's nervous as could be. And he starts talking, and he starts thanking Cuss, and then all the memories start coming. And he starts crying, and he says, F it. And he walks off. That was the end of his speech.
So, too far for a Saratoga Day run.
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, it's...
hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, easy.
It's right by Colgate.
You know, I'm in charge of the two-day off entertainment when we go to Saratoga now, so we haven't gone that way.
Well, you get. I've urged you to go that way. You get a two-for-one. Actually, you can get like a five-for-one if you... I could give you a whole list of things to do. But you get off that exit, you can go to the Boxing Hall of Fame, and then you can go to the next town on 20. You're in Canastota, and now you go to Chittenango, the home of Frank Baum, L. Frank Baum, the author of Wizard of Oz.
You can buy a munchkin while you're there.
Oh, you know what you would love? You would love Chittenango Falls, right above Cazenovia. There's a fabulous hike down. It's not even a trail. It's not very far. You go down, and you got Chittenango Falls are gorgeous. I'll show you pictures.
We'll be doing a little research for next year.
There you go.
Fantastic. We do, of course. We've done the Baseball Hall of Fame, and that's within easy distance.
Well, and about James Fenimore Cooper, the Cooper House?
We didn't do the Cooper House. We did, last year we did the Woodstock stuff with going to Big Pink and some time around there.
There's so much.
Boxing Hall of Fame. You could
go up very easily. Go up past past Watertown and go up to the Thousand Islands.
That's a little bit far.
It's not. You. This is a guy who literally drove 4 hours to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, from Kentucky Downs to see the recording studio.
Yeah, that's true.
So don't tell me 4 hours. By the way, thanks to a litany of listeners, I got the best. Here's Stu Slagle and also King Hackley, Cager, an informal term that originated in the early days of professional basketball. The term comes from cages that were used to separate the court from the fans. And I can tell you, there's certainly growing up in New England, there were certain, including my own high school, these tiny little, where literally there's not any space between the audience, toward the fans and the court. And we had, in fact, what was the other? There was Illing, and there was, what was the name of the other junior high? There was the other junior high across town in Manchester, Connecticut, had a court that was so packed, there was a running track above. You would go up a circular staircase to jog on the running track above. So the thing was so cramped. And that I could see the cage concept there very easily.
Well, there you go. Simple explanation.
Is that Bowers? Bowers? Bowers Junior High?
So I can, now you mentioned that. I remember a high school. I played high school sports, and I can remember a high school that did have a running track.
Yeah.
Above the basketball
above
court.
The field of court, the court to play. And I can, Hamilton College, you ever go to Hamilton College?
Drove by it, didn't.
Well, Hamilton College, their hockey arena is a tiny little bandbox, and they have a Zamboni. I don't know if they still have it. A Zamboni that is separate from the tractor. It predates an actual Zamboni. It's a tractor pulling like an ice machine that's grading the ice. It, hysterical. But they've got cage. They've got chicken wire around around the arena. So that you're learning all kinds of things.
You never know.
This morning. Too funny. Lisa Lazarus is going to. She is. You know how much she appreciates our audience. She's going to be late for the high woo meeting to spend a few minutes with us.
Oh, that's great.
At 9 o'clock. Thank you to Lisa. Robert Hartman joining us, and of course, program director, 50th symposium, and Robert widely acknowledged for essentially breathing fresh life into the program, coming in with some new perspective, and congratulations on what we're halfway through, but what feels like a smashing success.
Thank you very much. I feel like we're more at the eighth pole than halfway through. So I see the finish line in sight. So we're happy with the way things have flown so far, and we're going to keep getting to that finish line.
So this is your third year, correct?
Fourth.
Is it fourth?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, the time flies here.
Time flies,
yeah. When I was here teaching in 2019, of course, Wendy Davis was here. So you started in the year after.
The year after,
year
yeah.
after. Yeah. So, you know, Wendy did a wonderful job, and having you come in, like Steve said, just brings new ideas, new thoughts, new ways to do things, and same old base, but like Steve said, you know, maybe a little spark going on, and you have a wonderful new assistant, Elizabeth Rogers, who came from, Penn.
She's most recently from Mahoning Valley.
From Mahoning Valley, but I think that's the Penn Gaming property.
Yes.
And she was part of our ROCO group, our racing conference, our racing committee, that we would talk every, we still do talk every month. And her immediate boss, Chris McElane, I remember I called him up and I said, you know, you're going to lose her pretty soon somewhere unless you, you know, like, promote her as far as she goes. And he was going, I know, I think she's kind of as far as she can go. And so I was not surprised at all when she had, she goes, you called me up or texted me, whatever form that communication said, you can't say anything, but, and I was just so happy for her, just wonderful, wonderful person, and go get her as you see.
Yeah, she's really hit the ground running. She's been a great addition to the team, so we're thrilled that she's joined us. She's already bought a house here, and she's committed. So we're excited for her future with us.
Yeah, and your team also. I see Denise is still here, and it's not easy putting on one of these shows, even though it's been going on. I just gave you a nice compliment, Denise, because you are part of the team. You know, we're sitting in here in the exhibit hall, and I equate this when I came in Monday to the day before a racetrack opens, where it's like everyone's running around, all nothing, nothing's quite done, but after all seeing it, you know it's going to happen, but you're still a little worried that it is going to get done, and then all of a sudden it's set up with all these here, the rooms are set up nicely with the chairs, and Robert here is, you know, running around.
Yeah, I know it's a complicated process, right? So we sold out the hotel here. We have all the food options, right? So we're going to serve eggs and toast or eggs and breakfast burritos or, you know, it's every little detail, right? The color of the lights, the color of the drapes. It's just you don't realize how complicated these types of programs are. It's just great that the industry is really supporting us. You know, we've had over 650 people register for this event, which is tremendous.
And you can see the comeback, and we've talked about it before. Well, obviously, when I was here many years ago, you know, the place was packed, and then the move over to La Paloma that didn't quite take. It just didn't have that intimacy that you needed here. You're bumping into people everywhere. That place was so big that you could go and not see anything, and so it took a little downturn. And then I came back here, and now the momentum, and you've kept the momentum going. And it's just fantastic. And the students also are a big part of setting this up. And I got to tell you, as it was when I was here, and it's a great opportunity for them, A, to kind of be involved in setting up an operation like this, and B, you know, getting to meet all the people they get to meet.
Yeah, the networking is great. We have something called a mentor lunch today where students get to sit one-on-one with somebody from the industry. So it's really great. Nathan Klein, one of our students, says, I have so many business cards, I don't know what to do with them. I said, Nathan, that's a good problem to have, you know, to have all those business cards. But one thing that your audience could help with are panel sessions. That takes the most time for the planning of this symposium is figure out what topics we want to talk about and which speakers we want to bring here to Tucson to speak to them. So Dick Powell was on a panel yesterday, 50 Ideas in 15 Minutes. That was a great panel. I thought it was probably the biggest audience we had for an end of day panel since I've been here. Everybody stuck around to listen to those and took that sheet of the 50 ideas. But you know, especially like betting panels. Some people say, well, have more betting panels. Well, we can't just have a panel just generally about bit, right? We need a specific topic, right? So is it, you know, CRW? Is it, you know, what is the specific thing? So if your audience wants to shoot ideas, I'll look at every single one of them, even speaker ideas. So we have two different ways that we go about this. Sometimes I want a certain speaker and then I build the panel around that speaker. And then other times I get the panel idea and then I find the speakers that fit that panel. So either one, people that, that your audience wants to hear from, that would make great speakers, or topics that, that your audience would want to hear about.
Yeah, I think that's, it's great to offer that. In other words, it's not just coming from you. Here's what we're doing. And if you like it, you, if you like it or not, who cares? And I know you did that, you've done that in the past. And the, this, the 50 ideas this time.
Yeah.
That was done about 5 years ago. Yes. As Steve mentioned, it was 45. So inflation took
right,
and we got
right
to 50. And those are, you know, you say, oh, 50 ideas in 50 minutes. You know, whatever. You know, if one or two of those get written down by the right person and they go back to their track or go back to their wherever they were working and go, you know, I heard this, it, that's, it works. It's that idea. It, that's the idea of it. And I mean, that's the idea. There's another idea. But that was fascinating, and I don't want to say fascinating, but boom, 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 let's do it. Not all of them are going to work for everybody, but it's the end of the day thing because that, people are looking for ideas. How can I make my business better, when, whatever kind of the industry it is?
Exactly.
And you had a good combination of people coming up with the ideas. So send in. We need another ideas from the
people. Yeah,
from,
please, please. Our students really get involved. We have brainstorming sessions in the office. We bring in our students. We have a whiteboard, and we just start writing stuff. We probably had 100 panel session ideas, and quickly they get crossed off, you know, little by little. One of them that I really want to have, and I thought would make a great panel session, but I couldn't pull it together, was the coach and his disciples. So bringing out Lucas here with all of the trainers that he's brought up under him, I thought that would have been an amazing panel. But sometimes, you know, for travel reasons, conflicts, you just can't get all those people in the same room. But yeah, I can't, we had so many ideas, and little by little, it's like a war room. They get scratched off, they get starred, they get changed. So back to your museum thing. Have any of you guys been to Savage, Minnesota?
No.
What is in Savage, Minnesota?
The bobsledding museum?
No. Mr. Savage was the owner of a horse named Dan Patch. Best standardbred of all time. So the town of Savage, Minnesota, named after him, has the Dan Patch Historical Museum.
All right, there
so
you go.
Horse racing related. If you're ever driving through Savage, Minnesota,
always,
you can check that out.
Always looking.
On the Rick's list. We've already done Canastota, New York today with the International Boxing.
Okay, excellent. Excellent.
Dan Patch.
We got to do a little Dan Patch. That would be fine. I just hit my 50th state today, or this year. So we finally went to Alaska. I got my 50th state. My wife needs two more. One of them is Michigan, so that's a reason to go up and get into that area. And the other one, ironically, is Louisiana. And she goes, how come you've never taken me to New Orleans? And I go, well, there's a reason. So, you know,
but are you, like, really seeing these states, or are you, like, doing the four corners and just stepping around and done four states?
No, I'm a traveler. But I will admit, on the 50th one, we've been trying to get to Alaska. So we actually had a trip planned. COVID came along and wiped that out. And then what happened was the next year we said, we'll just do it again. Well, all those people that got shut out in 2020, all their reservations got moved to 20. So that got screwed. So then I was getting to the point. I said, you know, I think I'm just going to go up, have a steak dinner, and fly back. And my wife Gina goes, no, I'm not counting it. I don't care what you say. So we finally found five days last year. It happened to be during the Kentucky Derby. I watched the Kentucky Derby from Seward, Alaska. And so spent 4 or 5 days up there. So I did feel better. I had my little sign that I held up. So that was kind of cool.
Okay. So it's official.
It's official.
It's
and
official.
I know,
it's not
you know
just
what?
Walking across the border and walking back.
And you know what? I'm glad I did it that way. But that's a good question that you asked. No, all the rest of them are totally legit, but it was good. I wanted to bring up one panel that, not a panel, one of the student groups that you had in the small room the other day where you had the students kind of go, let's say there was 10 people at the table and two or three students would sit down with the 10 people and kind of quickly give a small, biographical history of them, you know, where they came from, what they're doing and what they want to do to the group.
Right.
And, you know, some of them a little more nervous than others, but very well prepared just to be able to get a little feedback, and then they would go to the next table and go to the next table. That was a
So the way that works, Stephanie Hironas, right? Hironas Racing, Flight Line fame. She helped put it, organize it. So from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, they had an hour of kind of a lesson of how to market yourself, how to brand yourself, how to introduce yourself, which a lot of times we don't teach those life skills, right? We figure you know how to do that, right? You know how to shake somebody's hand, you know how to talk to them, you know how to introduce, you know, basic things that we take for granted, right? You know, an hour to learn about that stuff can't hurt. And then we put it into practice with what you're saying from 4 to 5 p.m. Then the students had people from the industry come in, and I saw the room was packed. So the industry again really came through and sat with the students, and I'd rather them be nervous and learn practically in that environment than when they're on a job interview, right? Because that's safe, right? Their safety. Everybody's trying to help them there. You know, I when they get to the actual job interview stage or meeting somebody for an important meeting, I want them to be prepared.
And that's the, you know, we had Todd on yesterday, and we had talked some of the different. Todd and I went to school together, and you know, he came here as a ways of a means to an end. He had a plan. He wanted to come here. He wanted to be a trainer. And went that way. I came here because I didn't have any way in, and this was my way in, and I had no idea what I was going to do when I got out. And so just to let everybody know that anybody that fits any on that two extremes or in the middle is welcome here.
And there's so many opportunities, as you guys know. I mean, it's not just being a trainer or working in management. I mean, there's so many, you know, you could be a lawyer, you could be an accountant. You know, there's so many different paths in this industry, in this game. So if anybody wants to learn more about the Racetrack Industry Program, they could reach out to me. All of our information is on the website, easy to find. RacingSymposium.com has all the information on this event, so anybody could reach out.
You know, you mentioned that the categories. I was talking to one of the students. I would say, which one are you interested in? Or what are you interested in? And we had three. I would say we were marketing, racing, or like hands-on with the horse. That was it. I mean, that's kind of what we had. And I heard four or five different categories that didn't really fit into them, which I thought was great.
Yeah, the big one now, I would say 25% of the students want to get involved with is aftercare.
That came up exactly.
Yeah, aftercare and what happens to these racehorses after they come off the track, and how could I make a business out of it, meaning how could I have a livelihood and be able to pay my bills while retraining racehorses and selling them. And it's a noble effort, and we have a panel on that topic today, and it's an important effort. And Pat Cummings and Stacy Clark Rogers and all those folks are going to talk about it. But students really want to figure out how to make it sustainable for a career, not just a side project.
Robert Hartman with us, the director, and the recruiting in general of students. And one of the things that's different in terms of the college experience, this is a program that has really thrived with older students, with people returning to college essentially to get an entree into the game. And our show is responsible for any number of individuals who heard about the program and got intrigued and changed the course. Steve May, most famously.
Yeah.
Joe was an accountant.
Longo?
Joe Longo was an accountant. He was, I think, in his early 30s when he came here. And now, of course, is a simulcast manager director, has moved from Naira recently to the Stronach Group. Talk about enrollment and recruiting and, you know, building up essentially the student headcount.
Yeah, so it's a tricky balance, right? We don't want the program to get too big. As the industry is consolidated and, you know, there's been fewer and fewer racetracks, we've consolidated along with the industry. So one thing we essentially promise students is there'll be a job waiting for them when they graduate.
Talked about yesterday.
Yeah, so we don't want to get too, big where we can't fulfill that promise. So, you know, as Golden Gate closes, Arlington, you know, all these racetracks that have closed, things have consolidated, and we've consolidated. So I think the right number for us for a student count is probably around 25. We don't want to get much higher than 25, because I just think the program will lose some of the special nature of our, of what we do. So we have about 16 students now. So we're still trying to grow. And you know, we go out, we hit the road, I go to events, we have tables, you know, it's tough. We do advertising on various, media. But it's a tough process, and it's not the easiest thing for somebody to do today to say, I have a job that pays well. I have a career. I may not like going to work every day, but it's tough for me to give up that career to go to Arizona for a year and a half. And we can get students out of here if they have a degree in a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. So we can move them pretty quickly through our program. So we try to help them, but it's a sacrifice, right? They may have to leave a family member. They may, you know, have to quit a job. But we find that once people go through the program, they come out very successful on the other side.
Explain one of the reasons you're able to say the job rate at the end is near 100% is because of the internship program here is second to none, where basically with such good relationships with all kinds of entities out in the real field that we're able to send students to just about any kind of thing to do with racing in the industry, and they learn.
I'll say in the past 12 months, every major racetrack has contacted me saying, if you have a good student, send them my way. We need good help. Everybody needs good people.
And that's in so many different arenas, in so many different capacities on the racetrack and in whether it's the racing office, various sub departments, horse ID,
racing investigators,
investigators,
mutual managers. There's this big cliff of mutual managers that are working that are 75 years old, 80 years old, and they can't leave their job because nobody is trained to be a mutual manager anymore. So, I know at a couple of different racetracks, their mutual manager, they won't let them retire, even though they're well past retirement age, because they have no one to replace them. And if there's no one to replace them, the mutual department has a problem. So there are these, you know, gaps. Equine vets is another big, big issue that we talk about. And it was mentioned yesterday, as well in the 50 ideas panel. There's just a real shortage of equine vets out there. So there's more jobs if people are trained and have that skill set and have the education for folks. There's no shortage of jobs out there.
Well, we can't express enough how much we enjoy coming out here every year, and the enthusiasm, whether it's the students themselves, and we hope, I know that this morning actually you got the capstone projects, and Hammer, you know, you've explained these and how important they are to the students each year, and Aldo Zamora, who is going to be a jock agent, he might actually be one of the first
jock agents in the country.
The first college graduate jock agent. That's not true, but it's fun to say. And Alicia Evans today have their capstone projects.
Yeah, all those will be interesting to see how that. You know, he surveyed 170 small scale trainers. He got 170 responses about how HISA has affected them. So that's going to be pretty interesting for folks to hear some of those results.
Well, as always, well done, and you can tell by the attendance of industry participants internationally. I mean that part of it, you know, every year I come across international, you know, business entities that are involved in the sport that, you know, have come here for the first time, and Australasia in particular. This is very frequently their avenue of entree to American racing.
Yeah, I would say this year we have more international participation than we've ever had, at least since I've been here. So that's been really positive. You walk around, you hear a lot of different languages being spoken. So that's really cool. for us. And it's just really nice to see the industry together in a hopefully rowing in the same direction. You know, we hear so much fighting and lawsuits and, you know, nonsense. And I talk to people and they say, only if we could work together, right? Only if we could work together, we could solve problems. So hopefully we make a small piece of progress in folks working together.
Robert Hartman and the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. We appreciate the university. We should acknowledge, I mean, that the fact that the university has been so committed to this, right? The auspice of the institution.
No, the dean of our college was out here yesterday. It was really great to have the university support. And it's really a team effort. And thanks for you for all the work you did. The Chuck Simon Memorial. You know, there's little things you'll always remember from these events, and that memorial that you led, Steve, yesterday was just really moving, and that's something, you know, that'll stay with me.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's so easy to talk glowingly about Chuck, and he loved his time here as a student, and was so proud of being a University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program alum. Robert Hartman, and Rich Rosa is going to pop in. And Dick, what did we miss at HK?
The three horse got up to win race 8. The 9 minutes to post for the last race 9. I like 1, 6, 9. 9 is the price. So I'd bet 9 to win and back him up with 1, 6 over 9.
Flesh it out for a second. I'll pull it up and... Let's give everybody a chance to play, and we'll try to pull the race in as we talk to Rich. And of course, the Daily Racing Form, with the expanded interaction with Hong Kong Jockey Club as it happens, yeah, right?
Let's talk about
it. Yeah, we
nice.
Will.
I like it.
Right? This is the Sea Eagle Handicap. They're going to go a mile and run those numbers down again, Dick.
1, 6, 9.
1, 6, 9.
I'm looking for the past performances. I have
1, 6, 9. The one is Simply Maverick, 3 to 1, with James McDonald, who, of course, led the heroics the other night as part of the HKIR. And I came here with a pad of paper and
is it under here?
Well, yes, it is. Thank you, Dick. and what are we? 7 minutes to post. The 9 is Satanta, with Luke Ferraris,
who has a crazy late kick. So even though Happy Valley's tight and short stretch, he'll be flying, and he has some wins at Happy Valley. So his running style is not necessarily the worst. He draws inside as a 2-turn race. You don't want to be outside. So I throw out the 12, the 5 breaking from post 12, the 3 breaking from post 10. They're just up against it. But the 9 at a price, he'll be flying. And then the 1 is logical, Simply Maverick. And then the 6, Chain of Gold, with Zach Purton. And riding for a guy who doesn't usually ride for, Dylan Moe. So that's an interesting combination. So 1, 6, 9, and at 6... Last time out, 6 drew post 12. So you can kind of toss that race. Race before that, he's beaten a neck. Today, he draws post 8, so much better, and he gets Zach Bat.
There you go. 1, 6, 9 if you want to box him up, or if you want to lean on the big price, which is 10 to 1 on the 9, Satanta. Chain of Gold currently 7 to 2, right around the 4 to 1 morning line. Simply Maverick was 7 to 1 morning line, but it's taking money. It's now 3 to 1. So, and Rich Rosa, it's been too long since.
How's it going?
Good to see you, as always.
Good to see
you at all the industry functions. And, you know, yesterday with Marshall Graham, we talked about, putting added data in the hands of players, and particularly helping them when it comes to the frustrations over late odds changes and, you know, the flush, the 30% of the handle that comes in the last 30 seconds.
Yep.
I know that we've been talking about it for, I don't know, 15 years, trying to explain to people why it happens. And it does feel, I said to Marshall yesterday, Rich, that it does feel like the horse players now, they understand the why. They're more accepting of the why. The question has kind of tripped into how necessary and how do we put at least part of the genie back in the bottle. I mean, we're not going to give away, you know, they're not going to, tracks in the industry aren't going to give away all of that handle. But famously, Maury Wolf in Vegas at the Horse Players Expo said in 2001 or 2002 that 20% was as much as the CAWs could reasonably be as part of the handle. And now we're probably at 34-36%.
Right, right.
And Maury warned about this, and nobody listened, and the, you know, greed won out. And it's costing us rank-and-file players who just feel that they understand volume discounts and access,
sure,
you know, and ready access and batch wagering. Marshall talked about, you know, limiting or paring back the batch wagering portion. But people just are saying, you know what, this isn't fair. It's too much. And I know the forum has done everything it can to help with the projected odds, to help people anticipate where odds are going to close.
Absolutely. So I've been at Daily Racing Forum now for a year and a half, and one of the things we focus on is we want to be the voice of the horse player. Like, we want to make sure that we have all the tools that we can give a horse player who comes to DRF with enough information, enough data points to make decisions to wager on races. And projected odds is just one. We're actually going to refresh that in 2025 and come up with version two of projected odds. And that's probably going to have alongside of it what we'll call the Daily Racing for Value line. We're going to get smart about things. AI is going to come into the picture. That panel yesterday about AI was very revealing in terms of what people are doing. So we're going to add something, we're going to add our version of Promana stat lines, what you see on Equibase. So you're going to be able to search through DRF specific information and come up with some AI assertions that come out of Promana. So if you look at a race and you want to see a stat line from the race itself or a jockey or trainer, we're going to add that in 2025. We're tinkering with some analysis of your wagering activity. So if an ADW wants to share, or you want to share your wagering activity, we can correlate it to the data that we have in our database. Of course, we're going to use AI on this and determine the trends in your betting. Like, what do you win at? Like, what happens? Like, what do you, when you look at something, is it buyer that leads you to a winner? Is it pace that leads you to a winner? What happens in that? So we're right now in the lab, so to speak, you know, trying to figure out what that product is. We want to get more information into the hands of the horse player. So we're starting to appear on simulcast shows. We used what I call our time form race profile cards on the Louisiana Downs show last year. So as Roxanne was talking about the horses in the race, she referred to the card that sits on her screen that has a lot of depth of information. It has our spotlight speed figure, our pace figures, a track profile for that particular horse, and it puts our early pace a graph in there and our finish projection. So it's, you're looking at a simulcast show. Maybe you don't even need to come to DRF. We want you to come to DRF, but there's enough information there that if you're looking in a simulcast outlet, you can see that, and it has the projected odds. So it's chock full of stuff. We're going to be more active in putting our products information right directly at ADW sites. I mean, we think we need to be there. We need, if you're betting on, you know, whatever ADW you bet on, we're hoping at some point you could see our information, you could see our closer looks. Maybe at some point you see our clocker reports. And clocker reports are something that I think we want to expand. It's difficult. It's a hard one because it requires a lot of personnel to be actively at the track and identifying horses and making those assertions. We had a great year with clocker reports. It's just a valuable tool. And I think that's one of the things I think that drives sometimes you see when we come up with a good clocker report where that goes on the betting side. So lots of stuff coming for 2025.
Well, and you know, it's incumbent, obviously, as the digital world supplants paper and hard copy, and you know, with I've been a champion of digital attendance, quote unquote, for years. I've said, you know, I drives me crazy when I hear, oh, there's less and less people coming to the no, there's more people coming to the racetrack. The attendance is higher than it's ever been because one person sitting in Altoona, Iowa, at Prairie Meadows, can visit 13 tracks on a Saturday.
Sure.
It's stupidity. Yeah. Oh, no one goes to the racetrack. It's like, oh, right. Okay. I went to 5 racetracks yesterday. I bet at 5 different places.
Absolutely.
I mean, the stupidest thing. And all you have to do is take the handle and extrapolate the average per person handle, and you could do a digital attendance. Been calling for this for years.
Yep.
But with the paper, you know, with the hard copy and the expense for the form of printing the paper and distributing the paper. I mean, this is the future for
you
guys.
Well, I'm not ready to make an announcement yet, but I can tell you that in 2025, we didn't even prep for that.
No.
I'm glad you brought it up. We're actively looking at the way that the horse player engages with our product, and we know that most players use a period of time to wager. So you did 5 tracks. You probably did 5 tracks in a 3-hour span. So we have to approach the sale of our product and make it very palatable to our customers to bet on multiple tracks. And we're going to find a way to do that. I can't say what that is. I don't want to lead too far into it. But we're going to redo all of our products and how we sell them in 2025. That should be in the first quarter next year. And I think that's going to be a big mover for people who do what you do, that just bet a smorgasbord of racetracks. And we want to make it easy for them. And we want to make sure that they're tuned in to wagering. As soon as they get to our site, next race up, they can get access to a past performance. They can get our information. They're ready to go. They hit their ADW and they go ahead and bet.
Rich Rosa sitting in with us from the Daily Racing Forum, and I want to talk about several other aspects and let you flesh that out. Dick, we're milling behind the gate at quick thoughts, and then pass that over. Any final thoughts here, Dick?
Well, I was happy Jenny liked the 1 and the 9, so she liked the long shot up near the top. She does a phenomenal job with her paddock reports, so. Yeah, it's just 2-turn race. You got to have position. And turf pretty firm tonight. They're running right around standard for most of the races. So maybe we can get a pace scenario, and here comes the 9 running them over.
Well, we're having the video feed is a little choppy.
What?
I need this thing.
And so it wasn't a bad line away going forward. Ivy League, he's up on the pace here with Ican. Simply Maverick over on the inside. Adori Fuji kicking up around Satanta. Hammer On and Glorious Journey came next. Noisy Boy back on the inside from Chain of Gold. Our Lucky Glory posted wide into the first turn, nearly fine. And at the back with him, Rising from Ashes. Up the side they travel, and the leader is Ivy League. He leads here a length and a half over Ican, running second as they run through the first section in 28.95. So a bit like one of our earlier races, they're nearly a second outside standard. Ican races second, Simply Maverick third. And fourth is Midori Fuji over on the outside. Satanta from Hammer On, and then came Noisy Boy, who's a little keen over on the inside. Chain of Gold, Glorious Journey, nearly fine back over on the inside, the grey. And then came back in the pack, Rising from Ashes, and Our Lucky Glory can see them all, but he's starting to make a move from the rear, as to his Glorious Journey, sliding up and around them 3 wide. Still the leader is Ivy League. He's had a lovely time of things in front, coming off the back straight, over Ican, Simply Maverick, Midori Fuji. Glorious Journey posted 3 wide down the side, followed by Hammer On, Satanta. Chain of Gold, they begin to jam up. Noisy Boy's well back. Our Lucky Glory nearly fine. And the last of them as they turn and go is Rising from Ashes. Ivy League in front. Down over on the inside. Icans in the centre. Simply Maverick stalking. Midori Fuji. Satanta running on towards the inside. Ivy League with Icann. Satanta still there. Simply Maverick. Icann just in front. Clinging on. Icann beats Ivy League. Satanta. Simply Maverick. Hammer on Midori Fuji. They were followed by Noisy Boy.
Well, the stalking trip under Atseni, right? Icann.
Yeah, and there was no pace in the race.
No.
I mean, they were crawling early, and
Ivy League tried to assassinate him and was being chased widely.
Well, he had back pain, so he wasn't in the best mood.
A level of humor that just can't be equaled. go ahead.
Do you know who Alan Boston is?
I know the name.
Okay. You know him as sports betting guru and everything else. Well,
71091, by the way.
He does a thing where he does work for the University of Pennsylvania, and he interviews kids that are going into certain programs. And if you ever see him on a sports betting show, he's all over the map. But he's actually a big part of that. So now I see this kid. Where did he go to school? So I'm wondering if Alan Boston gave him the blessing.
So bad. So bad. This Icann got a very nice trip in behind Ivy League and then wore him down in the late stretch. So, Galileo, that Ivy League was a 5-year-old Galileo gelding.
It's a weird business model because Romantic Warrior, who's now co-equal high weight in the world now, he sold for $900,000 at the Hong Kong yearling sale. Then they geld him. All these horses are gelded. So he's now earned almost $25 million U.S. Mm-hmm. He's going to the Middle East where he can get even more. And California Spaniels, similar, $12 million in earnings. So they buy horses with beautiful pedigrees. Galileo. Who would geld a Galileo? But if they can run and they can, what was the one a couple years ago? Russian Revolution. I think he won in Bahrain. He won a couple of million-dollar races around the world. They wind up racing to 6, 7, pile up a lot of earnings. And it helps here because Romantic Warrior, 3 cups in a row, Golden 60. We get to see them every year in these big races. So that part works well. But even for the owners, even though they gelded the horse and pay good money for him, it works out. They run for that much money, and then they're capable of going on to international type events, not just Hong Kong. So, but this has been a big benefit with the TV, the way it is now, with the odds and probables and everything. Just been a real big addition.
So, I'm glad you brought that up. So, Daily Racing Form started producing the Hong Kong show and putting the odds. We're not doing it anymore. They moved it to a different vendor. Not important why. Hong Kong's a great customer and client of Daily Racing Form, but I created that. The L bar that you see. And the reason why we did that is we thought that to approach the U.S. audience, and you bring up great points about Hong Kong, the nuances about Hong Kong racing, and I didn't have a great appreciation for it up until I got heads down involved in producing this, that it's a unique product. And it's a very bettable product with good information, very reliable stuff. The program that they create at the racetrack in English is just outstanding, with the talent that they bring on and the insight that they provide. And it really just needed a boost. It needed a little bit, like it needed to correlate to the U.S. audience is used to seeing that information on the screen. And now that it's there, it's great. And I think Andrew Champagne, who does the selections, and it's hard to insert the selections into the workflow there because everybody's talking all the time. But Andrew is an excellent handicapper and tends to give out some nice prices. So if you follow and you get to learn Andrew's methodology, it's pretty good. What I think is going to happen in the future with Hong Kong is, well, let me back up. Daily Racing Form today has a landing page. So if you want to get any information about Hong Kong, you can come to drf.com/Hong Kong. We have all the news and information. We get a lot of that from Hong Kong Jockey Club. It's the first time we've opened up our platform to another racing entity to publish directly to us. We get their videos, we get Andrew's videos and his weekly insights. We provide some statistics, some jockey trainer trends, and it's pretty comprehensive. There's a lot there. So if you and of course we publish the past performances. So if you want information on Hong Kong, that's a good place to start. But I think in combination with what you see on the simulcast, I think that's an excellent innovation, and I think that's something we should think about with other international racing jurisdictions, because sometimes the U.S. customer doesn't really understand what's going on, and if we could use the technology advantage and the data advantage that certainly Daily Racing Form has, we could publish these events in the U.S. parlance pretty easily and get them out there so that customers have a demand for them. If they have a demand for them, you know, we'll find and make data and create past performances for them. You know, that's where we think this is headed.
Expand on what we were talking about going into the race audio. Rich Rosa with us from the Form, and we essentially were hinting at something of a kind of a watershed or a tipping point on digital service versus the printed paper.
Absolutely. So what we want, the printed paper is an important part of our business. Many customers need that. It's very valuable at the at our betting destinations. You know, obviously not going away anytime soon. But as younger audiences come into this game, we want to make sure that we're on the same par with the information that they get from other sports. So you could go look at sports betting, and you could go find all kinds of advice, punditry, data, modeling, AI, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of that stuff is relevant to our sport. So if we put that in our digital product, and you could sort of meld your digital product the way that you want to handicap, and we have those tools for you, I think you're a better horse player. And our job is to help you win. So we want to see our customers, when we talked about CAWs, CAWs have a lot of tools, modeling, they have people programming, they're doing a little bit of arbitrage, they're doing everything, right? If we could do that for our customer and give them the tools that are kind of similar to that, then they can win too. So, for example, we have, we've talked about this before, our ticket maker. You know, ticket maker is an outstanding tool.
It was like, a leading edge. That was anybody.
That was AI before AI, right? Let's call it Steve Crist AI,
exactly,
right? That's what it was.
Exactly right.
You know, so we still benefit from his real intelligence in ticket maker, and those algorithms are still very effective. I make my tickets on ticket maker. Like, why wouldn't you, right? So we have those tools. We have a Dutching tool for exactas and trifectas, when we can get trifecta problems, only a few tracks, but you could sort of construct a bet and try to pick an outcome, and it'll tell you how to wager that, you know, based on what the probables are at any moment. We'll look for other tools to do that. Like, if we could find another a wagering tool that helps a customer, like maybe at some point we say, hey, you have a bankroll for this race of X, and what's your selection, sort of like ticket maker on AI steroids. Maybe we do that. I think if we don't do it, no one will, and if no one does it, then the horse player's at a disadvantage, and we want to make sure our customer has a lot of advantages.
Well, and you know, the players, the player response, and I mean, obviously, Rich, you know, there's no shortage of players that are involved at the Form, but how much beta testing and how much focus group type input do you get, what's generating
the ideas,
the developments? Yeah,
I have a product team and superb a group of individuals. They're all horse players, so they're all out there using the products. They are QA by just using it. So I get that advantage. So when we go into meetings, you might imagine these are very productive meetings. Like, we could talk at a very high level about what a product is and how we're going to construct that. So you, we get a lot of benefit from the hobbyist playing that they do. One of the persons on our product team we just added a few months ago is one of our on-air talent. So if you, I think you probably had Alexa Zepp on.
Oh, sure.
She's a wonderful handicapper.
She's sharp as, sharp as can be.
We produce a show on Sports Grid with Gino Bacola and Alexa on Fridays at 2:30 in the afternoon. So Sports Grid, if you're not familiar, is a digitally distributed sports network, sports news network that focuses almost exclusively on sports betting. So everybody talks about how do you reach the sports betting customer? Well, we put a show on with Alexa and Gino, and we try to teach horse racing to a sports betting audience to try to grab them. And the way we do it, I talked about those time from race profiles. We explain them. We explain multi-race wagering as a difference between what they do in parlays. We think it's better to bet our game than the parlays they tend to lose at. And then we sort of wrap it up a little bit with information. So tie it all back. Alexa's on our product team. Peter Smetting is a horse player a lot of people know. He's on our product team. And Scott Carson, who a lot of people know.
Of course. Lonnie Goldfeder.
Yeah, Lonnie's around. I mean, we got like a lot of people we could run the product by. Now, when you said focus group and testing, our marketing team constantly sends surveys to our audience. If you get one, I hope you fill it out. It's really useful stuff because we want to know what customers think about some of the things that we do. And I think we just recently set out a survey about what we were talking about before, like how do we price our products? How do we make the best assortment available that's valuable to the customer? And that's driving some of the decisions that we're making. So we're out there. We're doing that. And then there's always gut feel. Like I think I have a kind of gut feel about what people like and you know, I think that's kind of relevant that, you know, I come from a horse player background. I've used the products. I know them. And to, try to think in the minds of our customers and what they think about our products and how they use them and what's important to them. We're always thinking about that.
Well, it's encouraging to hear you talk. First time we've actually met and I've heard you before, but, It's encouraging to thinking about the horse player first.
Have to.
And, you know, obviously it's the form and that's who's your end game. But some of the things you're coming up with are you know, as an older player, they're fascinating to me.
Yep.
And, you know, just dipping in a little bit of the edges. And it sounds like you're going to make it a little bit more, you know, friendly to get into. And,
absolutely.
And that's what, you know, people like me need, you know, still like the paper like you, but I'm done delving in. I hitting a few more buttons as I'm handicapping and wow, you know, a lot of wow moments.
Right.
And I am starting to pare things down like, okay, I don't need that. But you mentioned earlier where you're able or thinking about, you know, trying to figure out, okay, how did I come up with that horse, and what are the things that are good to me and me
right.
that I can understand?
What factors work for you?
Work for me.
That's right.
You know, we might see the same 10 things, but I use this 5 and you use those 5.
Right.
And so that is...
Everybody has their own thing, right?
Right.
And sometimes you don't know what really works for you. I did this, you know, I don't know, 20 years ago. I used to create my own... I had my own handicapping model, and the model was based on, I tried to find out what factors won at particular tracks, distance, and surfaces, and what was the prevailing, indicator. And I tried to ROI that and what worked. And that's kind of like what Formulator is. But with AI, you could take it to another level. You can really scour and correlate very quickly and find trends and individualize it to you. So, I'm hoping we get that product. That's very much on the chalkboard, and we're trying to conceive that and think of that right now.
Rich, because I think the majority of us don't necessarily, you know, we see the AI references, and you know, there's the chat GPT and whatever.
Right.
Is each individual AI a specific modeled construct, essentially? I mean, what is the source? What is, you know, where is the mainframe of AI when we hear these references?
Let me try to answer that. I'll get close. if you saw the AI panel yesterday, anybody who's listening at home and they could access that, it's definitely worth your time.
It'll be published
in a couple of days, right?
Yes.
Definitely worth your time to see. And one of the demonstrations was the Notebook LM, where the presenter took the website for this conference and it sent it to Notebook LM and created an 11-minute podcast conversation about that. Well, I thought it was interesting because we'd done the same experiment a couple of months ago. We took a Horseshoe Indianapolis one race past performance, and I fed it in as a PDF into Notebook LM, and it created like a 10-minute podcast discussing that race. It was fairly accurate. Now, I'm going to answer your question. What that does, it doesn't really know about anything. It says, what is this, and tries to figure it out and looks at the headings and says, well, what's this and what's a buyer figure? What's daily racing? And while you're waiting for this podcast to be created, the computer, that model, is going out and trying to scour what it knows and puts it all together and tries to verify it. And then it comes up with a storyline that based on what it thinks it knows about what you just fed it and what it was able to learn using the information that it already has stored in its model or it found on the internet. Does that make sense?
It does, but like, for instance, I'm sure you're familiar with what Joe Applebaum is working on.
Sure, sure.
Is there a base, a plug-in of AI, of artificial intelligence data or you know, the synapses, digital synapses, essentially, that everybody starts with and then inputs the specific need,
sure,
of whatever, you know, topic, in this case horseplay, that then is layered into it, or is that original model interacting, you know, digitally, like Tron, essentially, out in the netherworld?
It's doing a little bit of both. So it knows what it knows because it crawls the internet, finding all the things that it knows. It reads all the books.
This is why people are scared. By the way,
this is it's a little. It hurts your brain when you think about it.
For those of you that have never seen War Games,
This is real stuff.
Exactly.
So it knows what there is to know. Let's take our stuff, for example, right? If our stuff, the majority of our data is behind a paywall, it can't get access to that. But if we fed it in our private model and we just gave it a data download and gave them all of our data since 1993, it's very possible that we could now question the model and find out things about our data that we would have never have known. And what trends it has, we just sort of set it on a path and then say, hey, tell me what factor wins at turf races at Santa Anita in the springtime, you know? And, you know, 30 seconds later, it'll give you a rough estimate and put a graph on there and tell you what the model's like. And then, well, I don't like that. I want you to do this, and it'll come up with that. But it's as good as the information it has at its disposal. It knows what it can know. And if you feed it additional information, it knows more. Now, that's not always public information. I think if we did something like that, we would keep it private because we want to understand it ourselves. But that's how that works. Does that make sense?
It does. But it
knows
core,
what it knows.
Yeah,
it's hard to grasp. Like, think about the entire internet. Like, that's what ChatGPT knows. Like, everything that's out there. It's mind-boggling.
Well, how many of those exist? There's the GPT,
yeah.
But I mean, is there, you know,
there are a bunch.
So each of the entities, the Microsofts of the world, the IBMs, the Googles, they each have their own.
Yeah. So I'm old enough to remember the beginning of the internet and how that got commercialized and then the boom and the bust and the ebbs and flows ever since. This is the gold rush right now. So everybody's trying to create a large language model so that they can be the next, you know, billion-dollar company. So they're investing in, you know, hardware resources, computing resources to differentiate themselves amongst each other. So there are a bunch of different large language models that have nuanced differences between each other. Like, there's some that are specific for a task. Like, I use this a model called napkin.ai. When I need like a chart or a graph in a presentation, I just feed it the data, and it comes up with like 100 different ways to put that into your PowerPoint.
Do they feed off of each other?
They feed off of, yeah. It's a, like, of I give it, I give it some information, ask some questions. I don't like that, do that. I mean, just for creating a chart. So I think it's pretty amazing. If there are AIs out there for like imaging, like, to create an image of the four of us talking on a podcast in a convention, at some kind of convention with one guy holding a microphone. They give you a picture of that, and it'll make it in like 20 seconds and show you what that looks like. That's pretty wild stuff. Yeah. Like, on the creative side, for music, you could, there are AIs out there where you say, I like rock and roll with a beat tempo of 108, with a driving a minor pentatonic pattern, with heavy metal vocals.
The Ramones.
And you give it, it's a little higher tempo than that, but you give it lyrics, and it creates a song for you. And like, it's not garbage. It's kind of interesting. So, I think, what did somebody say? AI is not going to replace your job, but somebody who knows how to use AI is. So that's the scary thought. That's what's, you know, I'm getting on in years, you know, but, thank God I understand this stuff. But I would say to anybody who's younger in the audience, I think you need to know that. You know, you need to know how to use AI because you'll be more productive.
How readily, and I mean, it, I don't know if you want to break it out into decades of age groups, but how difficult is it going to be for, you know, older paper PP driven players to interact and you know, essentially to familiarize themselves? I mean, we keep talking about how these initiatives, and I think all of us, whatever ADW we're using, there are degrees that are already, you know, interactive, and even if it's just as simple of a you know, like on Naira Betts, three thumbs up, two thumbs up, one thumbs up, as you know, recommended plays, you know, with these AI driven comments about the horse, and they're kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
the
hot
comments.
Trainer, fat, you know, this
horse's
quarter.
Most recent performances, yeah, make it a contender. No kidding. I didn't need you for that. but it is amazing, actually. It is notable. Especially when there's some wacko horse that wins, and I happen to look down, see, God damn it! I mean, there was something in
there.
The ether that the thing picked up.
That's
on.
Right.
But how easily and how readily do you sense that? I don't know, over 50, over 60 yeah. players are going to be able to utilize this, or do we really not need them to utilize it? Are we strictly interested in introducing the game to 20 to 30 year olds as they get more expendable income,
right,
and leisure time?
Right, a little bit of everything. So I think the important thing is, if we introduce AI to our digital customers, which are predominantly older people, they're it's not the 20s and 30s that dominate our customer base. I think that's pretty well understood. So if we're going to introduce that, we have to tell them what it is, but we have to make it easy for them to understand and use. So I'm a big proponent of crystallizing things down to charts, graphs, and numbers, right? So I give you a great example. I believe at some point in the next year or so, you'll see the first uses of the GPS system, the GMAX system, and the data that's derived from there. And we could talk about whether it, you know, how good it is or anything, but one thing I could say is that I don't think we're going to beam time races 10 years from now. So we got to get ready for that. And I think that's a perfect example where AI could be a huge benefit, because we could take that information and crystallize it. We could tell AI to make a model and create a number from that. And it could be like a speed figure or a rating or something similar to that. And we can get it in the hands of somebody who just needs to read a number or chart. So we don't need to make it complicated. We could do the modeling for them. I think that's where we want to be. And if we use AI to do that, you know, we're going to get there. So we're constantly thinking about that. That's why those time form race profiles that we use on the Sports Grid show, they're very simple. There's like 8 or 9 different data points. We're not hitting them over the head with a lot of information, but in reality, you can handicap a race from there because we give you a pace scenario. We're giving you sort of a race shape. We're telling you, you know, what our spotlight figure is and our early and late pace. And you could sort of put that together. That might be a little advanced for some people, but the spotlight number is, and it's just a number. It's like a buyer. So
then are you keeping score of
that's a great question. In terms of
yeah, the end
rates,
result. Yeah, the end result. Yeah. Do we go back and say, okay, well, you know, these work and these, you know, these may be true, but they're really not having an effect on the end of the race?
Absolutely. So we're doing that with our Timeform product right now. We're just trying to understand the utility of that data and how often when we pick a first, second, or third selection, how often they win, what the return on that is. Absolutely. Keep track of that. It gets difficult, and some of that analysis is nuanced, but we absolutely do.
Because you're going to get the point where no matter what horse wins, you're going to be able to point to something and say, okay, well,
it was that one.
Well,
yeah.
You know, and how many times is that one, you know, does that one, fact?
But let me put out a point here.
Translate it to a win.
I think one of the things that's very intriguing about our sport is that most of our customers, I say this in meetings all the time, is that they enjoy the puzzle. So we don't want to take the puzzle away from them, right? We have experts who can make selections and give you insights, closer looks, all that kind of stuff. And that's very valuable. A lot of horse players like that. But some horse players enjoy the puzzle. And they want to put it together themselves, and they want to do what works for them.
Sure.
And they want appreciation for their work when they cash a ticket. And we want to help them do that. Like, however you want to do that, that's what we got to do.
I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
Getting back to general, not just horse racing, if I ask the same question again, do I get the same answer? Goes out and scours the internet. I come back a day later, an hour later, same question, same model, so to speak.
Yeah.
Do I get the same answer?
No.
No, there's no way you would.
No.
No way you would.
No, that's interesting. Like, you won't get the same answer, right?
And for anybody that has seen the rather convoluted and silly Flash movie, there happens to be an amazing scene in there where one of the several, virtually every Batman is in this Flash. It's fascinating because it involves timelines.
Right.
And it explains this really well about, it's the Michael Keaton version of Batman.
Right.
And he's explaining to the Flash and Flash from the future and uses spaghetti and how cooked spaghetti, if you looked at cooked spaghetti, versus uncooked spaghetti.
Interesting.
And the intersection, let's say, of two strands of linguine versus the cooked pasta in a colander, and how essentially the timeline has changed.
Yeah.
If you could ask that, you're saying 24 hours, that timeline will have changed in 10 minutes. The information that's been accrued in the 10 minute interval will twist the answer, you know, and the intersection that much.
What I find is sometimes I ask AI something, I say, help me solve this problem, and it gives me an answer, and I say, well, that's not it, try again. And you should give it direction at that point. That's how that works. You need to tell it what was wrong with the information that they just gave you and give them pointers to what you want. But if you say try again, it'll just go try again, and it might give you an entirely different answer. So it's pretty wild. Like, I think one of the things we have to understand about AI isn't always right. So they all tell you, like right off the bat, that if you're going to explore this, you know, make sure you check the information before you go to open heart surgery. You know, like that's what, you know, that's the reality. Yeah. You know,
and you know the parts of this, and I've only waded into it because of Joe and his project,
right,
at Naira. But what's fascinating about it is that the users will be teaching the model how to provide information
that's
tailored to them.
That's the key.
And that is amazing.
I mean, it's
going to it'll within a certain period of time as people place their bets, especially if you accept the suggestions of the model.
Right.
It's going to understand what you value and how you play, and will tailor its focus to your style. If you're somebody that keys medium price long shots, 6 to 10 to 1 shots, tri keys or exacta keys, it picks up on that and it seeks out the best opportunities for your style of play. And I tell you the reason why I'm so thrilled we spent time on this, because this is the rank and file players' answer and the tool that will let us compete with the CAWs.
With an asterisk. They're going to use that, too.
They're going to use it, but they've already
They're probably already using it.
They may very well be, but they've already shown to have certain weaknesses that we can take advantage of, and most notably off the turf. It is the spot where they're blind without a cane.
That's very true. Very true. Yeah, it's definitely it's the Wild West, and I think we're just at like the beginning stage. This is going to go a little further. Some people say, "Well, how far can it go?" Well, I don't know. Maybe a lot further. I mean, I don't think we're going to have like the Terminator situation or anything like that. But we're going to become more reliant in everyday life on products that are made using that kind of technology. You won't even know it. It's under the hood. Like, think of Ask Siri or something like that. Uses some form of AI. And maybe someday Daily Racing Form has an Ask Siri. You come to us and say, hey, Daily Racing Form, what's the next best race to wager on? And who am I betting if I have a bankroll of $100? And we spit out a whole bunch of bets for you. You know, and if that's successful, our customers will use it.
It's the Wild West, and you're Richie the Kid.
It's just great to hear that the game is moving on with the rest of the world.
Well, it has to. If we don't evolve, then where do we all wind up, right? And I think Daily Race Reform has been around 130 years. It's my job to make sure, at least for the time that I'm doing this, that Daily Race Reform has an outlook for another 130 years.
So the racing farm has been around since
1894. America's Turf Authority since Marty McGee was in short pants.
That's right.
That's the ATR answer. Rich Rosa, how do people get in touch with you?
rrosa@drf.com. Easiest way, if you have any thoughts, suggestions, yeah, hit me up. I'm at a lot of trade events, at a lot of big racing events. Ask somebody, you'll be able to find me.
We found you, and we're glad we did. Rich Rosa, everybody, as we come to the midway point on this Wednesday at the symposium, things are picking up, and we're going to take the break. Only one of the morning. Lisa Lazarus is going to join us in a half an hour at the top of the hour. I'm going to get Stacy Clark Rogers to join us after the break and talk about TAA and the latest in the aftercare arena. Jay Hovde and Aaron Grider are going to stop by and talk about the book Jay has written. Jay Hovde can bang out a book in 72 hours. John Parada, who also is a furious keyboard veteran. John was going to join us yesterday. We had that delayed start, so I'm going to table John until I get home. So probably John Tuesday when we get home, so you can get his books in time for Christmas. And we'll do a lot of our book specialty last-minute Christmas frenzy. Nothing better than horse racing-related books. literary material. What else? Who else is supposed to stop? There's a couple other people supposed to stop by as well. Did you line up anybody?
I did not.
All right. That's all right.
Hopefully a student or two, maybe.
Doing the capstone right now, so we'll hopefully get the kids in hour three. Rich Rosa. I've known Rich for forever, actually. It's amazing. Yeah. What were you doing when we first met? I can't remember.
I was running a financial services company.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
You know, now I'm doing this.
and doing it well. All right.
That was refreshing for me. That's all new information for me, and I first time I really sat down.
It was, especially, well, his knowledge, his enthusiasm,
yes,
his ability to explain things, understand the nuances, I still like to see it. I'd like to have someone show me now when I do this. And one thing with CAWs, the advantage they have, I like horse. I want about 200 to win. A CAW might say, you like that horse so much to win, why not bet as a $13 X-Acta wheel instead of 200? And these are the probables, right, and it's going to even out.
Well,
the simple dilemmas
sometimes that we have. I want to bet $100 to win a place on a horse, or should I bet $100 to win and backwheel the horse in the X-Acta?
Exactly.
Just simple things like that. Yes. Is it worth it? If he comes in second at the 6-1, is that better than the place? You know, things like that. I guess we'll be at push of a button now.
Exactly right. And that that will be a huge innovation, a quantum leap forward.
Does that level the playing field a little bit more again?
Well, that's exactly right.
The world was flat for a while, then it got out of whack again, and now we're maybe leveling it off again.
We're leveling off for the first half of this Wednesday at the symposium. Back after this, Stacy Clark Rogers. The first name in aftercare. Stay with us. Back to Tucson after this.
It's Apple Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track. GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in Breeders' Awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.
The Remington Park Thoroughbred season is in the stretch run, heading to the final night of live racing on December 13th featuring the Springboard Mile. Racing starts at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Then on Friday, December 13th, the Springboard Mile will wrap up the season as two-year-olds compete for qualifying points to next year's Kentucky Derby. The first race is at 5 p.m. on Springboard Mile night, Friday, December 13th. The Remington Park Casino always features jackpot play. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Let your heart race at Remington Park.
Horse racing fans, the Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit continues in beautiful Orange County. It's the Los Alamitos Winter Thoroughbred Meet with outstanding daytime racing through Sunday, December 15th. First post is 12:30 p.m. Pacific. Our closing weekend of racing will feature a pair of outstanding stakes races. The Grade 2 $200,000 Los Alamitos Futurity will be held on Saturday with points on the line to the Kentucky Derby. Plus, top Calbreds will race in the King Glorious on Sunday afternoon. We'll host our on-track handicapping contest on Saturday, December 14th. You could win a seat to the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. Contest format and rules are available at losalamitos.com. The card will feature the Los Alamitos Futurity, which annually features some of the top two-year-olds in Southern California. And when the sun goes down during the winter meet, the fun continues with weekend day and night doubleheaders at Los Alamitos. The daytime thoroughbred racing circuit is back at Los Alamitos, with outstanding racing continuing through December 15th.